Lady Limerick, reel 5.
What did the others, did the sisters think of you? Would they be ones who would be likely to think that you were Jewish?
Oh yes, some of them definitely were, but most of them were awfully good and most considerate. But sometimes they did try and take it out of the VADs. Of course, I think one had to remember in those days, training in the hospitals, general hospitals, was very, very much stricter and sterner than it is now. And the probationers were put onto the most menial tasks. And of course, we all had to do a lot of menial work. I mean, we had to bump in the floors and clean the lockers and polish the brasses if they're wearing, you know, and all that sort of thing, which nowadays no nurse is expected to do. But that was in addition to our nursing duties.
How did the doctors regard the VADs?
Oh, they were much more friendly. They thought they were great innovations in their lives, I think. And they were most helpful, most helpful. And indeed, I remember when I was doing my training afterwards at Millbank. Well, when I say training, a refresher course at Millbank Military Hospital, where we had supposed to go once for a week, once every 3 years, to keep up any knowledge we had. There was a splendid doctor in one of the wards that I was working in, and when anything particularly interesting was going on, he would scream at the top of his voice, "Let the VADs see!" Because he thought we ought to take advantage of seeing and hearing everything we could in the short time we're in hospital, which is very wise. But I think there was a certain amount of jealousy on the part of some of the really dyed-in-the-wool martinets of the nursing profession, of which there were a number in those days. They thought that we all had influential relations who were going to see that we got into the best jobs and so forth. And they didn't really realise that we weren't interested in that at all. That was one of the reasons, I think, why there was a departmental committee set up to decide on the status of VADs, that they should rank as other ranks and not have officer status, which happened at the end of the war, except in the naval service.
What would the ratio of sisters to VADs be?
Well, I suppose it varied in the hospitals. In the hospital that I was at, we had, in the daytime, we had one sister to two VADs in a ward, and at night the VAD was in charge entirely with one sister, night sister of the whole hospital. But I suppose it varied in different hospitals.
So it wasn't that the sisters were absolutely surrounded by hundreds of...
Oh, no. I think in some of the hospitals they had more VADs, particularly in the, perhaps, the fashionable London hospitals, officers' hospitals and that sort of thing, but that I'm happy to say I didn't have to do with.
You said last time that you would have always thought you did not want to work in an officers' hospital.
It's perfectly true, and
why
I did.
Is that?
Well, because I thought there was too much of that sort of thing, VADs floating about, not doing anything very much. Some of the sort of fashionable hospitals. See, in those days it was so different. I mean, people who had the influence and, I suppose, the money were able to say they were going to start a hospital in France or somewhere, and they'd go out taking a bevy of young ladies with them and start their own hospital. It seems strange now to think of it in these days that there was that, I was going to say, almost lack of discipline. I suppose people were very grateful for them. Indeed, they did a wonderful job, a lot of those hospitals. But in those cases, it was rather the prominent people who chose the young VADs from their own, amongst their own circle of friends and so on. And also, I thought it would be rather a bore to be a nursing officer. They much sooner have nursed the private soldiers. They're much more fun. They were always full of... Well, I'm sure the officers were ready too, but I don't know. Somehow I felt it was a more congenial occupation.
Were you unusual in thinking that? Would the other VADs at your hospital have wished to be an officer's hospital?
I don't think so, no. No, they could probably have opted for one if they wanted to. After all, there were lots of them. They could have, I have no doubt, have gone where they wanted.
While you were at school, I suppose some of the other girls would have been losing brothers, cousins,
oh,
possibly
yes.
Fathers.
Yes.
Was that apparent at school?
Oh, yes, indeed it was. Because, of course, that started in the very, very early stages. And several of my cousins were killed while I was still at school. One of them, my very favourite first cousin, was killed, really, I think, about a fortnight or 3 weeks after he got out to France. I'd been to see him off to France with his mother. And I think that's one of the things which persuaded me to go in for nursing, because one felt there must be such an enormous need. It brought it home to one when these awful casualty lists started coming through. And it happened so quickly, you see, too. And, of course, a lot of them were so, had so little experience, so little training. And it was an incentive, I think, to make one feel that one wanted to do something which was rather more closely related to the war than some of the jobs at home.
Was mourning worn at school?
No. No. And I think in the war, that was one of the things it did away a great deal with, mourning. I remember thinking of the contrast when I went out afterwards nursing in France. And in all the French cities particularly, you see every other person almost was in widow's weeds and crepe and everything else, which I think had a very depressing, demoralising effect, really. It brought home all the tragedy, which was constantly there, obviously, but one didn't want to dwell on that. And the contrast when you came over to England and you saw so little of mourning, although you knew the people had perhaps two or three sons killed in the war or their husbands, whatever it was. I think it was determination not to let that overshadow their lives and their work, which kept the country going as it did.
Was there a shortage of nurses? Or were people flocking to mop their fevered brows?
I don't honestly know. I don't think I was in a position to judge whether there was a shortage of nurses. I think that there were as many as they were wanted, because, you see, there were so few openings for women then. But, of course, your training, if you were going to take your training, that would take some time. And I should think probably they had many more people volunteering for nursing training than they'd ever had before. And sometimes VADs who started as VADs felt that they might just as well be starting on their training as just marking time, as it were, as VADs, where they never get a qualification. In fact, if I'd thought how long the war was going on, I should have done the same myself. I often thought I was so stupid it was not to. But I should think for that reason there were many more volunteers of certainly the VAD type than there were later on, where they had so many other alternatives.
Yes. Was the staff adequate then at all the hospitals?
I think so, yes. I never heard of a desperate shortage. I think we all worked much harder than people do now. I mean, if we'd worked the hours that they do now and had the off-duty time they do now, we should have had a terrible shortage. But one expected to work for 12 hours a day and never to have a half day off or a day off if there was a convoy coming in or if there was extra work to do. I don't think it ever struck anybody's head that they should have regular off-duty times in those circumstances.
Was there anyone who complained about we shouldn't be working these hours, we should get a day off?
I never heard a soul complaining. And I don't think it was a question of calling for volunteers. I think everybody took it as a matter of course that they wouldn't dream of dropping their job or stopping their job if there was something to be done. Oh, no, I don't think that would have arisen at all. Certainly not in the nursing profession.
How adequate do you think your training was for what you were called upon to do?
Completely inadequate.
Completely inadequate?
Yes. Well, there wasn't time in the short time one had in, 3 months or something I had in hospital. I think they did their best for one. I worked in a medical ward and a surgical ward, and I worked in the theatre. Partly, of course, I wasn't, when I say worked in the theatre, that's not true. I was allowed to go and see all the operations, but quite properly I wasn't allowed to work in the theatre. But then, of course, as soon as you went to a military hospital or some emergency hospital, you had to turn your hand to wherever it was most needed. And you worked your training as you went along. Experience is, after all, probably as valuable as anything else. And, of course, as VADs, we'd all been through our first aid and nursing courses, so we weren't completely idiotic and unprepared for what we had to do. But that was theoretical. And in those days, of course, they didn't train you with all the modern things that they have now. You didn't have these wonderful simulated casualties and ox blood flowing from their wounds and all the rest to make it more realistic. They probably had a note pinned on them to say they'd got a broken leg or a hemorrhage from an arm or something like that. And you just imagine what it might be like. I think the training, the sophisticated training they get now is marvellous because it enables them to realise what the casualty would look like and what it would appear to them if they were trying to cope with it. It was so much more realistic.
Were there any problems then, or awkward situations caused by the fact that you and the VADs had had so little training?
Oh, I think probably there were, and that's why it was a great advantage to go to a big hospital, and when you weren't expected to do all the work, to acclimatise yourself to what you were going to have to do and see and be prepared for. I think otherwise to be plunged straight into it as a... Although in some ways it's much easier when you're doing the job than to see it. I mean, I remember not awfully enjoying seeing somebody's leg being carried off when operating theatre, but if I had to do it myself, I didn't mind. You know, it was when you're active, you don't feel it in the same way. Much more trying to be a spectator than to be participating in whatever it was.
What aspects of your VAD work interested you most?
I enjoyed the surgical side most, always. And that's why I always thought if I'd had the chance, I'd like to have become a surgeon rather than rather than doing medicine. Although, I don't really know why, but I suppose it just happened to be the side that appealed to me most. I suppose in a way it was so satisfactory to see the results more. You know, somebody came into a frightful wound and you saw it gradually getting better and better. It was more obvious than perhaps somebody who came in with malaria and was just being dosed with pills all the time.
Or injections. Did you have the option of choosing a surgical ward or a medical ward?
No, you just went where you were sent. Hoped for the best.
Which sort of ward did you work in most of the time?
I was mostly surgical, but then of course, being in military hospitals, you were much more inclined to get surgical cases. When I was abroad, we had a lot more things like malaria and so forth, but not in England so much. Oh, we had typhoid and those sort of cases, but and of course people got normal infectious diseases, so it was as much as anybody else, measles and chickenpox and whooping cough and all those sort of things. But normally it was surgical.
In a surgical ward, what would be the main type of problem?
Well, you had to learn the types of dressings. Most people were on, badly wounded people, probably on 4-hourly dressings in those days. I imagine the whole technique has changed now. They tend much more to leave the thing to look after itself. But in those days, you had these strong Eucerol dressings and that sort of thing. Or sometimes a wound was permanently irrigated the whole time. And we had to do these 4-hourly dressings and get everything ready for them. And then there were, of course, the ordinary things like getting meals and that kind of thing. That happened in any ward you were in. But the surgical side was the side that did interest me most. And, of course, you did get the most ghastly wounds. And then, of course, we had all these awful gas gangrene cases.
How did you deal with them?
Well, they had to be, of course, if they were very bad, usually it meant left to result in an amputation. But the great thing was, where the skill came in, was dealing with the wound in such a way that that wasn't necessary. Various methods were tried through the war. And then, of course, you used to get a lot of trench feet. They got that from standing about in these awful wet trenches. And it wasn't frostbite, but it was somewhat of the same thing. And then we all got awfully angry because it was suggested at one time that people with trench feet, it was their own fault and they ought to be court-martialed rather than sent to hospital. And well, it was a way of scrimshanking and so on. Well, I suppose in certain cases it might have been exploited, but by and large, they suffer an awful lot in that way.
Did you ever have men who had done something like shot off their fingers or something to
I never came across that. I never came across that. Shell shock, we used to have a certain amount of. And that, of course, the treatment of that by psychiatric methods was very much in its infancy. A certain amount was done by hypnosis. A certain amount was done by analysis, the sort of Freudian school. But and a few doctors tried to dabble in it, and with varying degrees of success. But it usually resulted in, if the amateur dealt with it anyhow, they might get the man onto his feet after a time, but he usually relapsed afterwards. It wasn't a permanent cure. And then afterwards, of course, I suppose they had specialised hospitals where they dealt with that much more understandingly.
With the wounded men, meaning bullet wounds?
Oh, quite
barbed
wounded.
Wire?
Yes. Shrapnel wounds, and some of them had been blown up and burnt in armoured cars and that sort of thing. Quite a lot of that. But it was mostly bullet wounds.